Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
What is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
I've looked up, why is T-Rex the most famous dinosaur? Do you guys, you ever think about that?
I didn't put it together until I had read Oedipus Rex, and then I was like, oh, that's what Rex means. And then, I don't know, do people just get lazy because, like, they just, like bow to the, like, monarchical structures or something?
I guess, from what I could, from my limited research, because I was looking up dinosaur names to try and to learn how to spell them or to challenge other people to spell them. And it's widely regarded as the most famous dinosaur. This is partly because it was the very first large carnivorous dinosaur to be discovered, and it was long believed to have been the largest that ever lived. Another factor was that it was probably the fiercest meat eater that ever lived. And another reason is because possibly it was discovered in North America. And its North American heritage may explain its position as the world's most famous dinosaur. Because you guys love crowing on about how you find dinosaurs and how great everything is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and also, like, you know, the American Empire is much more than the borders of the country. Like, we were making nearly all the entertainment at one point. So, like, we got everybody on this diet of, like, yeah, man, like, fucking America, huh? There's something up over there. We just have amazing PR.
You do. You got a great PR machine. Although I will say the wheels do appear to be coming off slightly presently.
They're loose. They're loose, guys.
What's the view from down there, mate?
Honestly, when I watch the news in America, it looks like
the
country is at a point when what would traditionally happen when a country whips itself up into this kind of state is that America would say, do you know what you guys need? Our military.
Democracy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the coverage ever like from the news, like in New Zealand, sort of saying things like, you know, because of America's rampant, unchecked racism, this is like a thing? Like, what's the sort of presentation of the unrest from, you know, the perspective of New Zealand?
It's hard to say because our news, you guys get some, you know, you get a bit of coverage, but the news outlets from which I'm getting my information are global, or often they remain American because they seem to be keyed in most to what's happening. The coverage is sort of like, my read on the coverage is sort of like, oh boy, I can't believe I left America in December 2019. Talk about a stroke of luck. That's sort of my spin on the coverage.
Right.
Because I came back independent of anything that was happening, and my friends would say, wow, is it tough? Do you regret it? And I say, regret leaving New York City in December 2019? I say no. That's what I say.
The other thing that was cool to see was, you know, in all over the country or all over the world, there were countries having their own marches for, like, in solidarity of Black lives and things like that. And I was very, very touching to see in New Zealand those happening. What is, like, what's sort of the thing that motivates, you know, I think every country has an aspect of dealing with some kind of racism or whatever that essentially people were connecting to it at any point. It wasn't just about narrowly this, but I think a lot of people felt connected of this feeling of, you know, oppression, colonization, things like that, slavery. Is there something like, you know, put me on to sort of like what the temperature is in New Zealand that, you know, obviously because you guys have your heads on straight as people, like what else was kind of motivating people to go out there and show solidarity?
The marches initially were in sort of just total solidarity. There was a big, from the organizers specifically, there was a concerted effort to not shift focus or kind of use it as a pivot point into local oppression. But there's a growing Black community in New Zealand, and then also traditionally there, like, I mean, we suffer from many of the same problems on a much smaller scale in terms of systemic oppression and a police force that, you know, disproportionately incarcerates Pacifica and Indigenous, like, Māori people in New Zealand. And so I think Middle New Zealand and sort of, you know, the we don't really have these poles in the way that America does politically, but middle to right skewing New Zealand, I think we have this very, we're quite proud of this lackadaisical, like, she'll be right, aren't we lucky we're here and not there sort of approach. And then beneath that, there's an undercurrent of people saying, well, it's very well for you to say that from inside of the status quo, but this is not working for everyone. And so I think It's very clear, even from here, that this is a moment in history. And it's sort of like, you know, if you ever wondered what you'd be doing when the worm turned, it's pretty much what you're doing right now. And so I think also because I think also because of our relationship to COVID-19 and how we sort of have given it a bit of a spanking, people quite excitedly and confidently were like, well, what better way to fucking get out in the streets than, you know, than a fantastic cause. Like on Sunday 2 weeks ago, that I went to the march, Black Lives March, and then, which would have been about 6,000 people, and then to a sports game with 45,000 people. And I thought, gee whiz, aren't we living?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's wild to even think that New Zealand March for Black Lives drew nearly as many people as, you know, KKK Palooza in Tulsa.
That was our big goal. We all sort of had an email going around. We said, let's get more people than Trump in Tulsa.
Were you in on it with the K-pop fans and the
of course,
and the teenagers
yeah.
on TikTok? You guys,
that was a separate but equally important email thread. I sort of spearheaded both of the threads.
Nice.
I used that traditional chain mail approach where I say, forward this to 10 people or your crush won't like you back. And you'd be surprised how that mobilizes people.
How effective that still is.
We need that NZDF to come through on the internet, man.
Finally, what is a myth, Jahis? What is something people think is true, you know, to be false or vice versa?
Here's a myth. That podcasting is better remote. I know, like, you know, listen. It's definitely nice to be sitting in my drawers right now. Y'all can't see them, you know what I'm saying? So I can have the thigh meat out. It's very nice to, you know, not have to get up and go somewhere. We have figured it out. Shout out to all the editors and producers. As guest and host of a podcast, I'm letting you guys know right now, we have the easiest part of this fucking job remotely right now. So shout out to all of those. But man, the energy of being in a room. There are some podcasters who are like, yeah, man, I'm liking the remote. I like it better. And it's cool. But as a performer,
yeah,
the energy of being in the room doing this, I miss it. I think it is better. And when we are able to get back in studio, I think all your favorite podcasts are going to churn out some of the best content that they've had in like the past year, because just the excitement and the energy of being back in the room together is going to be so evident in what you guys are going to listen to when it happens. So I don't know if that's a myth or not, but you know, if you're thinking that, I just want to debunk from my own opinion that I think podcasting should be done as much as possible face to face.
In person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there probably is a myth. Like I've kind of forgotten that they're doing it remotely, or at least that there is a quality difference, you know, because like that's what I've just been listening to for the past few months. But yeah, I definitely think things will, I don't know, that there's like a, you know, a 10 to 15% diminishment of like the energy and the timing and stuff like that, that I think.
Yeah.
And just from from this side of the equation, it's definitely, I definitely miss being in the same room with you guys.
He just, he misses you, Miles. He misses you. He won't
I
say
I miss
it.
Jack too. And I miss your mask. You know, getting obsessed, like looking at his sweat stains and getting distracted by them while we record. I know he's, but the thing is, I know Jack is comfortable right now wearing his jean cutoffs because he's a never nude like Tobias Funke.
That's right.
But it is true. Like there is something, there's just an energy. And obviously we are consummate professionals. So people didn't even know, oh, we're not in the same room. But that's because we're digging deep to give you guys that energy. But like the first three weeks, it was so disorienting on top of trying to process everything that was going on. But yeah, I think to your point, like I think there will be so much more laughter like and light when people are back in the room. Because, you know, even like comedy podcasts, like it's easy to still have fun and things like that. But like when funny people are all in the room together, it's a completely different experience. And for sure. I definitely miss that.
I mean, one thing I don't miss is, you know what I'm saying? Listen, you know, all podcast hosts are great. But, you know, I have been liking the fact that only I have been using this mic that I've been using for the past four months. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Sometimes you get up on these mics after somebody else used it. You got to spray them bad boys down with, you know, some Glade spray or something. So, you know, it's
called Ecolab.
I'm not missing that. I'm not missing, you know, the multiple mic use, especially once we get back in after the COVID shit. You know,
that's the next step, you know, because even the day we all had to shut our offices down, we knew nothing is going to be the same when we come back. And I think even like to these points, like I think we're going to be learn to be more efficient, like with our time. Like in how we work and what the things are that like how we do things in studio with mics and keeping things cleaner. Cause it's wild. I think the longest time because of relatively low incidences of pandemics like this, it's just been like, no sanitary guidelines is fine. Like we're just kind of rocking like that for 50 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And now I'm glad that there's like sense now, because rather than people being like, oh, okay, germaphobe, when you would like wipe some shit down at the grocery store before this, it's like, no, it's standard now. Like, what were we thinking? Like we should actually just keep things as clean as possible.
Yep. But you know what's going to happen now? We all going to live to 100 now. After, you know, once this passed, and we're going to be stuck in our relationships even longer now.
Right. You're like, Lord, take me that, on my 115th birthday.
In Korea, that the mask wearing is much more normalized because of having gone through SARS. So I'm hoping that kind of carries over in America now.
Hope so.
Mamadou, what do you think is something that is overrated?
Something that's overrated. Wow, I'm about to make it kind of hot. I don't know how you guys think about
this.
It's
what we love. It's cold in here. You could turn it up a little bit.
I know it's Juneteenth. This is going to catch me some flack, but like, I think chocolate is overrated. Oh, the silence? Is that what we're going to do? Are we going to be immature like that? I think chocolate is overrated.
Chocolate. Okay, present your case, my honor.
Yeah.
Thank you, gladly. I just don't think it's as popping as people make it out to be. And I'm not saying that, I think that like there's definitely chocolate industrial complex in there too, with like holidays and stuff.
Yeah, fuck big but chocolate, right?
There's other stuff that's also good. And I think
it's
that
crazy
like-
It's crazy because you're like looking at a chocolate woman right now. So it's just like,
I am.
Wow.
And the thing is,
overrated? Wow.
And that's the thing. I'm not saying that you're not a sweet person. I'm just saying that chocolate has been treated as the sweetest thing in the world for too long. I think it's cool.
Arguably is. I'm flummoxed.
It's arguably is. That's the thing. It also, to your point, is arguably isn't. I don't think it's as popping as it should be. And for me personally, and again, he asked me, I just want to be clear. I just said what I thought.
100%.
I just think you can have
that opinion. I mean, it's just like how Donald Trump stares directly into the sun and tries to fight it, you know, during an eclipse. Like, you can fight anything. So if you want to fight the sun, you can fight the sun, you know?
The wildest part is that I feel like you want me to go to, like, the candy aisle after Valentine's Day and just stare down chocolate now. Like, because I will. Like, I'll be like, I dare you to be 50% off. Like, that's not how I am, so.
Just knock all the Russell Stover's boxes off the shelf and see if you're like, fuck out of here.
Yeah, fuck Ferrero Rocher. Who the fuck is
Russell Stover needs to just go ahead and keep it to Virgil's.
Wait, so.
And just tell us why. Tell us that they are the last minute chocolate for your side girls and for when you forgot about your wife. And
have
your
any of you had to
good.
Explain the Virgil's thing to anybody? They're like, why are people saying like a Virgil, two Virgils? You know, like we've been in bondage for about what, 8 Virgils?
Right.
And people are like, what? Yeah. It's really funny when like, well, is that like, okay, so Virgil Abloh only gave 50, never mind, you know,
right.
Yeah.
Google it.
It's a whole story. Yeah.
Like, you know, it might not be for you, you know,
but
if
honestly,
you don't know,
I like
you don't
it.
Go. Right.
Cause I'm like, finally we're getting like some of our own language back that feels like it can't be sold and bought by white folks for money. Cause they love to take like, remember Fleek? They destroyed that in a week.
Oh.
Remember For Shizzle? I'm still mad about For Shizzle. We had For Shizzle for less than 48 hours before they were like, For Shizzle, my nizzle. And I was like, well, there it goes. Snoop, pack it up. So I'm glad that we keep that and Hotep jokes because they don't get a Hotep jokes either.
Right. Some people are like, what's a Hotep?
Who is Dr. Umar and why should I know?
What is a Yakubian?
I will say, though, the funniest shit to me in the world is seeing a Koofy on a white person. Like when Nancy Pelosi and all them were taking a knee with the Kente cloth, I'm like, bro, this ain't even right. Like, there's nothing. You thought you did it. But you did it.
It was the first time I had gone to Ghana in West Africa. I had met this Canadian man who married a local woman and basically became an elder, like a chief of his area. So he had the designation of Nana. So he was called Nana Dave.
Stop.
And he was like this. Yes. And
Dave,
he had this.
Nana
he had
Dave?
This. He had this Ghanaian wife. They are full out Kente, like, you know, because that's a very Ghanaian thing. Like they're in Kente cloth. And I saw I was like, are you? I'm like, this Canadian, okay. I mean, he's out here. He's like building a hotel and like trying to do something like and live in the community. But it was like very jarring when you see like white people were like, oh yeah, like I had to get out of there and I had to just come to Africa. And I'm like,
whoa. I'd be sick, bro. I'm West African. If I went back to West Africa and some dude named Spencer was running my town, I'd beat the shit out of him.
I was like, this is it. And people
like, fuck you mean, Nana Chad? This is Nana Chad. He runs our village. How did
that's
you come
Nana
over
Bryce.
Here?
That's Nana Taylor. Hey,
yeah,
what's up?
That's wife
that's
Karen.
That's Nana Lakin, and that's Nana Karen. How did they get over here?
And that's Nana Kaylee Hay. Like, hey. I couldn't do it. I literally, I think that's the wild thing about Africa is that people don't realize that, like, some people are like, yo, I can't do some America shit, and they're black and they go there, and there's some people who are white, like, can't do some America shit, where things are set up for you to be the most successful, either honestly or not, and you go to Africa and then you somehow find yourself running shit, that's white supremacy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Woo! Find yourself
comes
running
full
shit.
Circle, like still on that savior behavior, where you're like, well, I provided jobs. Yeah. On that savior behavior. You gotta let it go, baby.
Yeah. Dave. Dave.
I'm not joking. I gotta find this photo. It was like a JCPenney mall portrait of like distinct, like you know how these portraits look normally of like a village elder or something? Like it's very stoic and posed. And just to see this dude who was like sunburnt to shit, and like with his wife, but very like, we're out here. It's a surreal photo.
Damn. It's also like, it's that wild Olan Mills, like kind of blue, kind of little, little textured background.
Yes.
Where he's got two African person and a not the opposite African person. And they're just standing there. Oh, God, it's triggering.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back.
Let's talk about Columbus, Ohio, hometown of the great Cody Johnston, of Ohio State University, 3 hours from a place I grew up, and named after Christopher Columbus.
The director.
Not the director of Goonies, which is what I thought growing up. I was like, yeah, of course they.
Oh, named after that guy, the lead singer of Genocidal Tendencies?
No.
The great explorer, Christopher Columbus?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Explorer.
That was flippant. Right. Yeah, there. It's interesting, you know, again, the anti-colonizer slaver wave continues. The Teddy Roosevelts white man on top statue is going to be taken down outside of the Natural History Museum, which is, you know, again, depending on what side of whether or not you like racism, you'll have an opinion on that. But the statue itself, I remember seeing, I was like, wait, it's a like a indigenous person and a black person on either side of the horse. And he's above. OK, well, that's an interesting message. So that statue has a planned retirement. And then even like the ice cream, the Eskimo pie will no longer be branded as such. I think Dreyer's is the parent company. They're doing away with that. And if you want like a Sports Center style recap of white supremacy in full panic, just watch Fox News, because like they almost kick off like every right. hour with like an Eskimo pie. Now it's like they have like this like weird, they always tune in with what fucking company woke up today, I guess, sort of right. guffawing. And now, you know, Columbus, it's their turn for the woke armies of Satan to put their attention upon this name. But I think it's hard to say, like, you're going to just completely rename a city because it's the fucking capital. It's, like, the largest city in the state. There's a lot of stationery, man. Yeah, a lot of signs are going to have to come down. But there is a petition right now to have the city renamed after a true son of Columbus, Guy Fieri, but change the name to Flavor Town.
I mean, obviously, that's a good call. I think for now, it's funny if it gets over the line right now, because, you know, I mean, that's good marketing, isn't it? Everyone's going to want to go to Flavortown. And then it holds, if it's a placeholder, but somehow, you know, sometimes people name these interim things and then they don't get around to getting changed. 50, 60, 70, 80 years from now, you know, a whole new generation will get to learn that this place is called Flavortown because of the great Guy Fieri.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely, man.
I don't know. I mean, this is a thing that we were talking about even last week when there were talks of like, what do you do with Nathaniel Bedford Forrest's, you know, statue in the Tennessee Capitol? Like, do you put up people like Dolly Parton? Because that's a Tennessean people can be proud of. But honestly, I think if you're going to be corrective, you need to put up representations of the antithesis of what that former offensive form right. stood for. So if you have someone that is a colonizer, then you need to actually set that balance off by now enshrining somebody who is about liberation and things like that. I think just as a one-to-one, because it could be easy to just be like, yeah, that would be fun. Let's just replace it with something meaningless. But I think just for the ability for a dominant culture to enshrine some of their worst people, and we're trying to actually have some kind of sea change, then do the right thing and actually let's celebrate people that are we're doing the things that are getting us towards the future we're trying to envision.
I would suggest naming it after a Native American word, but that there's no American towns named after a Native American word, so that would be extreme, I'm sure.
Just all of them?
All of them. Yeah, like so many of them.
Yeah.
I would agree. Was there What's the plan for the statues? Are they going to get melted down? Like, the things I often wonder about is there a place for, you know, education through the horrors of the people who have been deified and put up in these statues? Is it worth creating essentially a museum of horrors where you essentially advertise them with plaques which actually detail what they did instead of sort of, you know, like, is there a revisionist history version of it where we say these are the statues? This is what they actually, like, here's what they were represented as, here's what they actually did. Instead of just trying to sort of, instead of this erasure approach of saying, no, everything's been hunky-dory here since dot one. I mean, how do you actually, you know, what's the proper course correction in terms of re-educating ourselves and future generations on this stuff?
I think that's sort of the, you know, long-term discussion about, you know, clearly right now, what the last few weeks have established that there's an appetite for some level of equilibrium on some, whether that's, you know, I think for people like us, we're talking about full on, you know, revamping, dismantling of these systems of oppression. That's the only way, I think, this is the only way we can truly move towards any semblance of equality. But again, this is a slow moving machine. And I think those steps are going to have, they're going to take time, but we have to keep the pressure on. And essentially, yes, there is going to have to be some kind of like truth and reconciliation committee, something where America as a whole, like through our educations, like that we are officially taking the time to like be like, we really need to sit down with what happened before you were born, you know, and remember what the momentum was your life carried into this moment, because it's off the back of a lot of blood. And we were just, we just did a really good job of doing the thing of like, well, let's not actually, yes, I think my parent sucks, but I don't want to think about it because it's my parent, you know, and they gave me life or whatever. But sometimes you have to be like, yo, this parent is a straight up piece of shit. But it's okay, cause I'm not a piece of shit. And all I can do is at the very least acknowledge what a piece of shit looks like, so we no longer have more pieces of shit out here running things.
Yeah. I do really like the idea. I mean, all of the really rich, fascinating cultures and, intricate histories that were just completely wiped out by these assholes. Like there's, you could fill every square foot of America with testaments to that stuff. And that is way more interesting than the version of history that they give kids currently.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, like, it's almost like you could do a series, and maybe we should not include this, but I honestly think if you did a podcast that was about your city and it was a true crime podcast of how fucked your city has been that you don't know about, people would just have their minds blown. And people didn't know that, like, in Pasadena, like, black people couldn't, like, own property there till like, the 60s. You know what I mean? And then people look at Pasadena now, like, oh, it's so many, like, liberal, you know, white people. But again, we have to remember, like, what liberal means versus, like, progressive or leftist or someone who is actually fighting for equality. Because liberal just means, like, you're willing to stomach a certain level of white supremacy until a point.
Miles, Jack, can I tell you that I am so fucking tired?
Yeah.
We do this every 2 years. We do this every 2 years. This one felt different for a second. We'll see what happens. I'm so fucking tired, man. Yeah. It's just, it's always black folks getting murdered, queer folks. Maybe we don't have rights all of a sudden and we don't know. And then this time we got lucky because this bunch of assholes decided that we get to have rights a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
Women are talking about all of the stuff that happened in the workplace. I'm so fucking tired, you guys. Like, I wish that I had, like, a more eloquent, funny way to phrase it. And I probably will, like, literally 3 seconds after I get off, I'll be like, ah, that was a funny line I could have said. I am at that intersection of, like, so many of these things where I'm just like, I'm fucking exhausted. Right. And I like Tina Fey. I think she's very funny. I think that she has long had issues with, and a lot of people have said, like, well, that was the point of that character. Okay, cool. What about the other stuff? What about, like you can say, well, the point of that character was that they were shitty, but why? There's a way to make jokes that reflect that the character is a shit person. Right. And there's a way to make jokes where it's like, I just want to make that joke. Why on Kimmy Schmidt was there a dude who was named, like, Dong? Like, that is, that character had agency and was able to be like, that's shitty. But you kept making that joke, my dude.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you can't make jokes that push the envelope or whatever, because that's always, like, the defense. I'm not saying you can't do that. But, like, actually do that. Don't just be like, oh, well, it's blackface, it's whatever. And we've talked about it. I think you guys have talked about it. I think as a comedy community, we've all talked about it. In the 2000s, we were all fucking reckless, man. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, the currency was be as shocking as you could, do the most shocking shit that you could. Yes. And that was the currency. And I think a lot of people have a lot to reckon with back then. And I think a lot of us have moved on from that because we recognize that was shitty and awful.
And lazy.
And actually,
like, not because I think jokes about race, that's like the boss level of humor and irony. If you can craft actually accurate, eloquent humor or jokes around race, it's not easy. And I think a lot of people just do the thing of like, dude, I'm just pointing out that that's racist and we're laughing that that thing is racist. And that's lazy versus crafting some kind of joke that actually goes deeper than saying racism exists and actually you know, exposing the psyche of the kinds of people who engage in it. Those are the jokes I find myself. They're almost like the kind of jokes you don't laugh because they're so real. You just go, woo.
Well, yeah, like there's a huge difference between like, oh, well, you guys are just supposed to know that I did this thing, like the Sarah Silverman show. You guys are just supposed to know it was ironic. Are we? Is that how jokes work? Because if it's not funny, whatever, it doesn't communicate the idea. So it's, and that was even in the 2000s. This was like too recent.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I have opinions about cancel culture that I don't think it fucking exists. First of all, I think usually the people who are like, oh, we canceled, blah, 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 we got them out of here. It's kids, man. Being stupid and wanting to spread memes on your Twitter hashtags, on your TikToks, what the kids are doing. Most people who are genuinely thoughtful people are not going around being like, we canceled this, unless they're joking. It's not about cancel culture. It's about like, yo, you did this thing. Fucking own up to it. Learn and move on. And I think that when people are able, depending on what they did, because some shit it's like you raped a bunch of kids, you don't, maybe you get to just be in jail forever,
right?
But I do think that there is a space for people to learn and grow, but I also think that like you should probably, more than just erasing the shit that you did, acknowledge the learning and growing.
Yeah. Or realize, yo, actually, I need to sub myself out and I need to sub somebody else in.
In capitalism, we are all just fucking pawns, dude. Like, it's how much money we can make this person or that person or whatever. If you don't make them money, that's when you get quote unquote canceled, because they're like, well, we can't make money off of you anymore, so we're just going to move you off the board. And everyone has a right to say what they will or will not support monetarily. And a lot of the stuff I see that's anti-cancel culture is very much like, well, you have to support me or you have to support this. No, I don't. I don't support anything with my money and my resources. Right. That's trash. And that's why companies say, like, we don't want to work with anyone anymore, because it's capitalism all the way down, dude.
Has Jane Krakowski said anything about being in blackface?
Does she have a Twitter account or even know what
are they is? Like, is she absolved because she didn't write it and she's merely like the actor? Because I'm curious to hear too. Like, it's not, you know, on some level, as a performer, you get the script and you're looking at it and like, wait, I'm doing blackface in this episode? And you're either like, oh my God, I love it. It's going to be so funny. Lol. Or did she feel really uncomfortable and just felt that societally she wasn't, you know, we weren't at a place where she could speak up and advocate on behalf of, you know, other people? Like, I'm interesting to see all those levels, because on, you know, it's not just Tina Fey. Like, it's also the actor who then embodies the script and goes out there. And I get it. You have contracts and things like that. But I'm just curious to know what they're feeling, what their thought process is in this moment, looking back, when Tina Fey seems to be getting a lot of the, you know, headlines.
Well, and honestly, she should be, as it was her show. She should be.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. She has to account. I'm just curious what that experience is like for her.
I wonder, because it's, it's like speaking up about anything else, right? There's a possibility that she went in and said, I am really uncomfortable with this. Or I guess at that point had her management come in and say, we're really uncomfortable with this. And then someone smooths it over and says, no, like, this is the intent. It's totally going to be fine. We've been doing this forever. We know what the line is and we know that this is okay.
Right.
And also, she is a very talented actress and she is really funny in that show. Name me major roles that she has done that hasn't been Tina Fey.
Ally McBeal.
Right. Tight. Name me major role. Well, no. And I think that's great. But like,
that's where she, I mean, no, I don't.
No, you're right. But like, name me in the last, like, those were her things. And she, it sucks, man, but it's,
you hit your wagon to a star and it's kind of like, this has taken me to a certain point.
And this was she wasn't even originally cast for that role. That was supposed to be, what's her butt? Sorry, I can't think of names right now. My brain
Rachel
is broken.
Dratch?
Rachel Dratch. And in the pilot, that was Rachel Dratch. And it wound up being her.
And I don't even, man, I don't know how much people get paid. I'm sure that it's more than I make. But it's also, Jane Krasinski, like, she's not bowling over Hollywood and getting a lot of work. That is one of those things where it's like, this might be my one nut to last me the rest of my life. She was a woman who was not young. And that makes a difference. And it doesn't excuse it. But it, to me, it makes more of a like, it's not exactly like she could go and make a commiserate. Like when I talk about people who work at DOJ and people who work at the White House and other stuff, you could go to a law office and make that money. You could go to other places. Yeah, it's not the prestige. It's not the White House. But you can make that money elsewhere. I don't, again, what is Jane Krasinski? Is she going to work at a Radio Shack? Like, what's she going
to
do?
There's no place for an actor or performer, you know, to go and just say like, well, here's my resume. Okay, so can I get this, you know, acting teacher gig at this high school?
Or,
you know what I mean? Like, like what? Because the industry is dominated by this singular way of thinking and a very homogeneous culture that is running it at the top. That, yeah, like, that's the other thing, again, that to this point of, like, that has to be addressed too and broken up because that's the same thing. Yeah, and even, like, with when, you know, Jon Stewart was talking about how, like, the writer's room practices in The Daily Show, sort of like, we didn't, you know, we removed, you know, any kind of names that would signify like gender or race or anything like that. So we're just going off the work. But at a certain point, because everybody's thinking the same, you're just going to agree with everything that's reflecting your shared worldview and it's never going to challenge you. And then you're like, wait, how did we end up like this?
And who's getting let into Harvard and who has money to do UCB and who has money to do these unpaid internships where they can learn how to write things and who has blah, blah,
that's
blah, blah, fucking
the
blah.
The thing from... I really like Tina Fey's Bossy Pants memoir, but there's this passage where she talks about, like, it's like a joke, a sentence. She's like a very funny writer, but there's this passage where she writes about how she constructs a writer's room. And she literally says half of the people have to be from Harvard,
right,
and the other half of the people need to be from Second City or UCB. And it's just like, well, there's your problem.
And then one screwball and one wacky one who does the jokes that you say, we don't do that.
But I'm going to say this right now. I have been doing comedy. Okay, I've been, take it way back. I've been acting for basically all of my life. Like, I mean, student stuff, the high school stuff, whatever. But I've been acting for most of my life. I have been doing stand-up for, I don't know, over a decade. I have been in L.A., for what, 6-7 years. And then when I first got here, I was doing a bunch of temp work and whatever. This is going to sound shitty, but it is true. I have a TV gig. I am working on TV and it's very recent. I have just now gotten to the point where I could afford a fucking UCB class. That is fucking stupid. No, that's fucking stupid. And my college is obviously like that stuff is also trash that I can't fucking afford or pay for. But, at least, I mean, it's all shit, but at least those were loans. Before, and I'm not even kidding, before I got booked on a TV gig as a writer and to do voiceover, I could not afford a UCB class.
Right.
Trash, man.
Yeah.
Trash.
Yeah.
The only way I could, like, when I started getting into comedy, it's when I left politics. And I just had to save a ton of money because I was like, man, I was just looking at these classes. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, I got to pay $600 for some guy who I don't think is funny to tell me how to write. But fine.
And they're rarely ever fucking funny.
Right. And I'm like, I guess I know how to. But I know the game now and I can write a great game sketch. But also, like, when you have the other thing is, too, like, you get instructors there who, like, don't understand your humor and shit on you or their critiques of your work has a dampening effect on your creativity rather than like being an actual nurturer, like as a teacher. And then it's, you know, there's so many levels too, where there are a lot of cultural mismatches in comedy where people are like telling groups of people that that's not funny or this isn't as funny, da, 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 da. But yeah, it's tough.
Oh, at every level. God. At theater school, and this was, I mean, granted, this was a long time ago, I won't say how long, but I would get notes because I was the only black person in my theater class. I would get notes that would be like too urban, too this, too that, like why are you this urban, why are you this that or whatever. And from what, and again, I have never experienced working at Second City or UCB, but for things I've heard from other people, it's only been very recently where they've been like, Oh, yeah, I guess your all-black team can, like, do a herald or whatever. I guess, like, it's valid and you don't have to blank yourself totally out. Because when they say, and this was an experience I had in theater school, they say to make yourself neutral. Neutral is white. Neutral is not anything else. Neutral is get rid of everything that's, excuse me, oh, God, I'm burping up coffee. Neutral is not, the default is white, and that is what is taught in schools. Is that that is your default, is you have to talk this way, you have to whatever, like you have to have a Midwestern accent, you have to be okay with straightening your hair, and like some things are like, okay, like tattoos, whatever, piercings, okay, I get it, those things are optional, but...
Yeah, who you are as a human being.
Who you are as a human being, yeah, but that is the expectation. If you want to get ahead, you have to be neutral, and being neutral means being white.
Right. And I think this goes back to how at every level, no matter where someone is, you have opportunities to correct the course of these kinds of things. Like if you find yourself as a teacher, think of your curriculum and what you are communicating to your students. Or if you work somewhere and you know that there's a way for you to change something where you work to actually address this problem, like let's say just say, well, we don't get a lot of black people who apply for the job. It's probably because you don't post your job anywhere either. And it could be so insular that your job is strictly through word of mouth. And because of that, you've completely cut off people who are not in your social group or socioeconomic class. There are things like that, just very subtle things you could look at that are very telling, and people can actually do little things like do that work.
Do you pay for your internships? And if you do, what colleges are you looking through? Are you just looking for colleges, or are you also looking, there are very talented people in all things. Like, would it be possible for people to say, I want to do an internship? And yeah, maybe I did community college, but I'm not at Harvard. Like maybe I've done, or even I've written this many articles that have been published, or I've written these things, I can show you my work. Yeah, I didn't get into Yale, but like, for some of this, I'm sorry, man, for comedy writing, you ain't gotta fucking
You don't need
to,
that. You don't need
gotta
that.
Gotta go to fucking Yale, man. I'm sorry. You don't. You don't.
Yeah, you have to it's go not, to Harvard.
You don't need to be in the Lampoon. We're not splitting fucking atoms here, man.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed. Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. And we're back. Real quick, I don't think we got a chance to talk about, they looked at the security tape. They checked the receipts on that cop who said there was a tampon placed in his Frappuccino.
Uh-huh.
And nothing, that didn't happen. So it seems like the police are really out of touch with the wonders of video. Like,
You're fucking kidding me. That was not real. I thought the tampon bay fuckaneer with his Flopuccino was the real story. And that's not. Oh, God. Then who? So are people being mean to cops? I don't get it.
It's all these stories are so incredible because it is watching law enforcement officials essentially write fanfic of their own persecution in real time.
Yeah.
Is an incredible exercise to see. Okay, what would be the most egregious? Well, I guess a tampon. What would a guy like me get at a... I guess I would get a Frappuccino at one of these places. And like just kind of the A to B to C. And you know, historically, Starbucks has, lest we forget, has perpetuated a lot of fake anti-police violence when the young lady wrote pig on the guy's cup.
That he wrote on his own cup.
Exactly. A couple months ago.
Self-harm. That's all they know is this self-harm. They're truly just a vile group, you know what I mean? Like,
and then when you look broadly at the conservative movement against Starbucks killing Christmas with their like not putting crosses on their Christmas cups, it's like a lesser version of that, but it's still the same sort of idea that like you can get everybody outraged by claiming Starbucks is attacking you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you've seen...
have like the morals to actually follow through on any of like their supposed boycotts or anything. Because at the end of the day, their brains are fully fucked off consumer culture. Like, there's no way that they're like, yeah, you know what? I've really thought about my place in this consumer cycle, and actually giving my money to Starbucks isn't what I want. Aside from them destroying Christmas, I just think as an enterprise, it's probably not a good idea for me to participate. That's not what it is. It's just pump faking. That's all these people do. It's just a pump fake. I won't go. Okay, then don't. Fuck you. We're doing the same thing. And watch, they still go. And they shut the fuck up. Mm. And now they're just like, well, then I'll write pig on my own cup. Like, okay, idiot. You're still here. And you gave them your money, you fucking dummy.
Now, we're getting this news in just now. But from the @Starbucks official account, they've announced that the new holiday cups will be cops. On their cups. They're going to put cops in Santa outfits on their holiday cups, making everybody happy.
Oh, man. Just saying po, po, po down the fucking chimney.
Speaking of front row seat, so I did just want to do this quick guessing game of what do you think the classic movie is that has topped the box office at like drive-through movie theaters? And I will just say that I think it would be a fun movie to watch at a drive-thru.
I'm trying to think of what I've seen ads for, because I know like in LA, the older movies I've seen them advertise have been, like one was E.T. and another was not like Pee-wee. It was some another '80s movie. What decade is it from?
'90s.
Oh, '90s movie is number one.
Oh, okay. I have a thought. I have a thought.
Yeah.
Is it Independence Day? Pew, pew, pew.
No. No.
Armageddon?
That's a good guess. What'd you say?
Armageddon?
No. No. So the reason I think it's kind of appropriate is because a lot of the movie takes place in a parked car or parked cars.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Wait. No.
The morning after? No.
No.
Is that real or is that a pill? I thought that was an apocalypse movie. That
might be just the day after tomorrow, you mean?
Oh, the day after tomorrow, right. Oh, yeah, because they're kind of like huddled up in cars, like freezing a lot of time.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Okay, what is it?
Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, yes! That's fair.
Jaws is up there, too. But you were on the right track with Spielberg. But Jaws, yeah, Jurassic Park, the number one movie in America last weekend.
It's like
the number one theater. $517,000, but still.
This feels like the thing, like, in my mind, I thought like a solar flash, you know, magnetic fluid, like wiping out the world, Earth's electronics. And I'm like, that's why I have all the albums I will ever want to listen to on vinyl, where I will never rely on the CD. I can always have this shit on. I don't give a fuck. There can be no electricity. I can hand crank that shit and put my ear near the needle, and I can still hear J Dilla. So there's shit like that where, like, this feels like that world where our technology has ceased. So then all we can do is just completely go retrospective now with all the media we consume. Yeah. And it's like,
yes.
All right, yeah, get ready for the re-release of BAPS.
All right, but act like you wouldn't see BAPS in a drive-thru theater.
Oh, I saw BAPS in the theater, okay? And I know I have that ticket stub somewhere. I saw it at the AMC North 6.
Whatever happened to the short, chubby one? It's fine. We'll talk about this off air.
Yeah,
justice for the short, chubby one. Mm-hmm.
But the top 10 is Jurassic Park, Jaws at number 2, then The Invisible Man. So there's like some newer movies. Trolls World Tour at number 4. The Hunt, which is, I think, a
A24 movie, I think, that was like one cared. Right. The controversy was more than the movie was worth.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay. It was either A24 or Blumhouse, and I don't remember.
I think it was both, maybe. Then Back to the Future, and then a new movie followed, then E.T., then Jumanji, then The Goonies. It's like my favorite movies from when I was a child.
Yeah, a lot of them were released kind of around vaguely this week. So I think a lot of people are like, well, it's not necessarily an anniversary that you care about, but it's around. Because I think Back to the Future was released around 25 to 35 years ago.
Oh, that makes sense.
I don't know, man. You can't quote me. But I think it was released, it's close enough to an anniversary where things are like, it's Back to the Future. Man, we'll just do it. Who cares?
And also, it's like good marketing from the drive-ins, because, Jack, for that exact reason, you're like, oh, I love that movie. Guess what? You're the dad driving the kids to the drive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So if you can bait the parents, like, because it's also funny, like, we're in that phase where I remember, like, movies, like, my parents, like, oh, you're going to love this. I used to love this. Oh, if I loved it, you're going to love this one. And I'm like, what the fuck? Andromeda Strain is bullshit, bro. Like, I don't like this shit. Like, I was too young, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Or, like, Thunder, he's like, oh, man, this James Bond. I'm like, this is old as shit, bro. This looks dumb as fuck to me. But I remember that excitement of, like, a parent trying to be like, you're going to like this. And be like, no.
Trying to get you excited about the thing that they're excited about. Yeah.
I'm like, put, yeah.
So what do you do if you don't
get into the old James Bond movies?
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I don't drive. So what, do I just, like, pay an Uber driver to hang out with me for, oh god, do I have to date so I can go see movies now?
Wow. Hey, you're sitting on a genius rom-com script that Lifetime will probably buy immediately.
Meet cute.
I wonder if you could just, like, ride your bike up or, like, what, you know, like, and just I, because it's still
no
because
okay. Well, like, if people are getting gone out the paint for trying to get through a drive-through for Wendy's, I'm not doing it for, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not. But so this is like, I haven't, I'm single during Quarquar. I don't have a car.
Okay. So, you know, hop in. People offer rides at the very least. Yeah. You want to borrow a car?
Okay, see, date in the front, me in the back, the way God intended. Right. It's a date mullet.
Date mullet.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.